The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What's up, fellow addicts? This is Shannon, the producer of The SDR Show. On today's episode, joining Ralph Sutton and guest co-host Don Jameson is the lead singer of the band Hailstorm, RJ Hale. It's a really fun interview. We get to hear about RJ and his sister Lizzie Hale, how they started the band and how long they have been working together. It's basically forever. And a lot more about his performances and what he's been doing during the pandemic and his passion for fragrances. It'll all come together once you listen to the episode. Remember, we do this show live every single Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern at gasdigitalnetwork.com/live. You can watch it there for free, but the best way to support the show is to go to gasdigitalnetwork.com, use promo code SDR. That'll give you a 1 week free trial, which gives you access to every single episode of this show we've ever done, all 528 of them, as well as you get the episode sooner, you get high def streams, you get to take part in the live chat, and it gives you access to every episode of every other show on the entire Gas Digital Network. All of that for free for 1 week. And if you've been thinking for a while about joining and just haven't done it yet, the prices for subscriptions are about to go up in September. So now is your last chance to join the network and lock in your prices, and they will never go up if you join before September. So use that promo code SDR. All right, here it is, the RJ Hale of Hailstorm episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is the hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone walk the hole. It's weed, I'm beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's art, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is The SDR Show. Sex, drugs and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. Back with me once again, I'm going to say maybe the fifth or sixth time, Don Jameson. How are you, buddy?
I am raking in the dough, filling in on the SDR show in 2022. It's unbelievable. Thank you.
Yeah, it was almost last week. It was almost your boy, Jim Florentine, who was going to do it because you couldn't do it. And both of you know our guest today. I would say this. I think it's either the third or the fourth time's the charm. I'm not sure exactly which, but thrilled to have this guy on. You know him as RJ Hale, drummer for the Grammy Award-winning band Hailstorm. New Hailstorm out now. They're on tour. We'll get into that. And his new project called Chemical Fire, spelled very awkwardly. We'll get into all that. And he's smoking
good
some
plug
sort of
right
pipe.
There.
It's RJ Hale.
It's such an honor to be here. Thank you for having me. I love sex, drugs, and rock and roll. All those things are great things.
Oh, yeah. They are all good things. Let me ask
good things.
First things question, is that an actual pipe or is that a prop pipe?
No, it's a real pipe, but it is used as a prop mostly. Right. It's just there's nothing in it, you know.
They outlawed Juuls now, so people are smoking pipes.
Yeah, going back to the old traditional tobacco, going to tobacco pipes and cigars. I'm into that stuff. So
I bet you it will do wonder. I didn't even think about that. Banning Juuls is going to do wonders for the tobacco community. I am sure of it. It's going to do lightning. And also there's a weird law. I don't know if you deal with this, Don, but apparently on like YouTube and shit, you can promote nicotine products, but you can't promote tobacco products. It's a weird delineation because really all tobacco products have nicotine. But if they're promoted as a nicotine product, for some reason you can get away with it. I don't know why that is. Anyway, not a very exciting story. Let's start with this. How was Tulum? I saw you.
Let's get
Tulum.
To the news.
How was Tulum, RJ?
Oh my, it was very much needed. I'm sure you probably saw. It was my first time actually taking a trip to go on a vacation for the sole reason of just vacating. Usually our idea of a vacation is like, okay, we have a couple days off in this city, so let's just hang out for a few days and then right. back to work, you know. It was very much needed. Unplugging from the world was therapeutic. I've been an advocate for mental health for like for a super long time. So unplugging is really vital, I think.
Yeah. You know what's funny is that I did not know, like, of course, the band now together since 2009. So we're on like 14 or maybe 2008, but 14, 15 years as a band that the world would know of as Hailstorm. But you two, you and your sister, Lizzie, have been together, obviously as brother and sister, but as a band or working together creating music since you were 10. That's crazy.
Yeah, 97 was when we first started. Yeah. Don't do
that. That is wild. That, I mean, that's insane. So were you always the drummer and she was always the singer? Did you try different things growing up? And did you also, weren't you like in a Christian music scene?
Oh, yeah. We started in the wholesome Christian scene and then we got out of that pretty quick. But hell yeah, look at that. Yeah.
I'm actually been friends with Michael Sweet for years. Such a good dude.
He's a good dude.
Are they the holy grail for the Christian community, or are there bands that are bigger these days? I don't know. I'm a Jew boy from Brooklyn. I don't follow much of that.
I would say that Striper is like the 80s hair metal band of the Christian world. But the generation that we grew up on was like DZ Talk and Newsboys and Michael W. Smith and all that stuff. It like was kind of our upbringing. And so we wanted to have a career in contemporary Christian music and like to be a CCM artist. And the first thing that the local Christian radio station asked us was, how much money are you making? You know? And then we were like, well, none. And they're like, oh, well, we don't want to play you. And so the local secular stations were like, oh, we got a local show at, you know, on Wednesday nights. Why don't you just come down to the studio? Well, you guys can do a little performance, you know? And we're like, cool. So they were like way, way more supportive. So we're like, I think this is the world for us, you know?
That's wild. So you were kind of ousted out because there wasn't enough money coming in from the Christian world. So they moved you to the secular world.
That's what it seemed to be in the beginning. But we just kind of got out of that very religious community in central Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and kind of branched out, and now we play the devil's music. So.
Was your were your parents super religious, or was just a fact of the community you were in?
I think it was we kind of grew up in like Philly in the city area. Mm-hmm. And we went to a church there and they were actually pretty cool. Like they were like very realistic and they, you know, talked about how like, you know, the good and bad things on both sides. But then we moved to central Pennsylvania where it kind of got a way more rural area. Mm-hmm. So I think that it kind of got a little bit more intense in that area. And yeah, we just kind of just got out of it. Just religion just wasn't for us, I guess.
Although I was going to say, Ralph, although it has seeped in, and still to this day, because on the new album, one of the big anthems, and I can't wait to hear it live, is called The Steeple.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
A number one rock single right now. There's 6 number one rock singles. It's pretty wild. And I feel you put the song Raise Your Horns on there. It's like a, all right, look, we really are still embracing the devil's music. Fuck that, right?
Kind of, yeah. But I have to say, like, I have much respect for those who are religious. Like, that's fine. That's great if that's your thing. Not particularly our thing, but that's fine. But we've kind of taken that and turned it into, well, you know, 90% of our lives are playing live shows. So at the live shows, that's when we interact with the music lovers, the fans, the people that are there to hear the music and to be a part of that ritual. And it kind of feels like that sometimes. It feels like this this sanctuary, you know, mm-hmm. where people come out and, you know, over the pandemic, not only did we realize how vital playing live shows are to our mental health, but to the mental health of the fans that were coming to the shows, when that was stripped away, it hit them really hard too. So we really realize how important it is. And that was kind of a lot of fodder for lyrics on the new album.
The interesting thing, and I mean, I don't want to get into a philosophical discussion right at the top of the show, but it is weird to me because I do feel music has, if you're younger, like 20 or in your teens, music doesn't mean what it means to a 30 plus year old, where music is, you know, music is about a 10-second soundbite on TikTok. It's not about following a band for 15, 20 years and falling in love with every fucking thing they do. It's a weird time right now because I don't think the younger generation has that experience that you're just talking about because they don't live and breathe music the way we do. It's not a product that you cherish anymore. It's something that's going on in the background. You may disagree with me, but I definitely feel that I see that happening with the younger generation. They don't obsess over the nuance of every band that they follow. Where Don and I, I'm sure we would look at like what fucking Rob Halford was wearing. Where can I get that? And reading all the liner notes of every single book. That shit is gone. It's wild.
That's why I have so much respect for the metalheads out there that are just very, very dedicated, very much like, you know, they want to embrace every nuance of the bands that they right. love. And yeah, I guess you could argue that the majority of the younger generation is kind of more, everything's a little bit more tailored towards social media.
And sound bites.
We know we're moving in that direction because now we're content creators and it's like, oh, got into music to become TikTokers, but whatever. It's fine. Like we've embraced the change of the world, and TikTok is fun. I'm scrolling on there. I laugh. It's a lot of great, hilarious user content on there. But it's also reassuring to see that there is still a sizable amount of younger kids and younger people coming out to shows like our shows and coming out to these major big festivals, these big rock festivals, mm-hmm. and actually wanting to get in the mosh pit, wanting to headbang, you know, and get their energy out.
Let's hope. I fucking
that's
hope
therapy
so.
Right there. You
yeah,
know?
It really is.
Hailstorm bridges that gap because first of all, they are young and they talk about.
Thank you.
Ish. I'm going to throw on the word ish. I'm going to wear the ish to that young. Go ahead.
I didn't say ish. I didn't say ish. That was Ralph. they are young and they talk about like what you said, RJ, you guys talk address mental health things and LGBTQ things.
Happy Pride Month.
Yeah. That young people, that's important to them, but yet you are old school in the sense of you get out there. And like you said, you put on this heavy show, people want to jump in the mosh pit. So you get the best of both worlds there. You're not going to get the mosh pit, but I'll be at the show.
I want to tell you, by the way, RJ, I'm not sure if you were there. I feel like you were, but this is the first time I met your sister, right? I was the host of the thing called Ship Rock for 11 years, right?
Of course.
And the first time that we did this thing called the Stowaways, which to those that don't know, it was like one or two members from a bunch of different bands get together, go on stage and do either cover songs or they'll do one of the songs from one guy's band, then another.
Yeah.
It was kind of very like free formed. And I was the host, and this is the first time we get there, and I'm on stage about to bring you guys up, and I think you were there too, and your sister was there, and a bunch of other bands are there, and it's about 20 minutes before showtime, and everybody backstage, which fucking surprised the shit out of me, were super fucking nervous, because you're not in your environment. It's not your band. It's not the other band. It's me, and are we going to play well with these guys? I don't even know those guys. Like, the energy was fucking weird backstage, right? So I ran out and got a bottle of fucking Fireball, came back and just started doing shots with all of you guys. Did never forget doing shots with Lizzie on stage. It was crazy, but it was one of the wildest nights I've ever experienced with a bunch of rock stars. Were you there that night?
The instant cure, just a bottle of Fireball. Oh, God. Even though that may make for a painful next day, it worked in the moment. Yeah, I was there for that. And I got up and played a few songs. And I was several shots in. And I think I completely butchered a Metallica song or something. But it didn't matter. Everybody was having fun. Everybody was going crazy. The only nerve-wracking part that I could remember was the fact that we had no cell phone service. So I couldn't, like, go on Spotify and just like refresh myself on these songs. Like, okay, I'm just going from memory. And they're just like, get up and play a song, play Whom the Bell Tolls. Like, okay, I kind of know that one. Yeah. You know, it was basically like, you know, just go, like everything goes. But yeah. it was like a really fun and exciting thing to be able to
And it became a tradition
go.
After that. They still do it to this day, you know, and it was just so funny because I always feel so wild. We all feel energies in a room. And I was like, wow, everyone here, these are all major fucking bands and they're all a little nervous. It's wild. So I just ran out and got that bottle of Fireball and changed the trajectory real quick.
Oh, we certainly did. I don't know if it was for the better or for the worse, but it definitely made us feel better.
So you touched on this before. The lockdown was the longest you guys went without a gig since you were a child, right? You just came back from Tulum. That was the longest time you did, like, without being in a band. If I'm right, your album cycle was really in par with when the lockdown was going to happen anyway. That's when you were supposed to start writing that record. Is that right? Like, you were going to do that anyway, just lasted longer than you had expected.
So we kind of lucked out. A lot of bands weren't so lucky where they released music or albums, like, right before everything shut down and it really negatively affected them. But we kind of got lucky because we were supposed to be off and writing anyway. So we dodged that bullet, but yeah, it did push us back. But you're right, it was the longest we'd been off the road for that long in the same zip code sequentially for that amount of weeks. I think maybe the longest we've been home since 2009, since our first album came out, may
have
been like maybe a month and a half or something, maybe over the holidays, over Christmas. So it was, I'm not going to lie, like a part of it was nice to be able to just be normal for a little bit, just to have a normal life and just be able to be in the same place and be with my girlfriend and my dog. And that was really great. You know, I loved that for the time being. But yeah, you're right. Like you kind of start to realize how important live music
is. Yeah, for sure. You know? But the question I have for you, though, is like when you first started to, like, the lockdown wasn't even a real thing yet. You were already in that we're going to write an album cycle. And then the lockdown occurs. When this album, the new album came out, did anything from before the lockdown survive? Or once you realize, oh, we're in this for the fucking long haul, let's ditch everything and start over.
Kind of, yeah. I think there's one song called Bombshell that's on there that kind of started out as like this kind of AC/DC, like, you know, super fast punk song. And then we just kind of rewrote the entire thing and rearranged it and redid it and turned it into this like very trudgy, kind of drawn out, kind of almost trancey kind of thing. And I think that might have been the only one. But yeah, the rest of it, like, we basically just started from scratch. We started working with our friend Scott Stevens, who's an incredible songwriter, and also writing with me and producing the Chemical Fire stuff.
Right.
So we've just had a great rapport with him. He wrote our biggest songs. He wrote Miss the Misery. He wrote Amen. He wrote Apocalyptic. Like, he wrote so many things with us. So he's always just kind of been our go-to collaborator.
And he's also, by the way, if you don't know, he's been in that band called the X's, which was a fucking great band, you know,
that little band. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, people don't know, he's written songs for Shinedown. He's a real fucking dude. I'm sorry, Don, go ahead.
Everybody.
What were you
gonna say? I was leave it to me to be the professional one here. The album is called Back from the Dead.
Yes.
It's Hailstorm, and it's out now, and it's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, look at you doing the right thing. I was about to mention it. I like that you're coming.
Say the album again. The album is called what?
Back from the Dead.
That's right.
Yeah, props.
That was the least gothic-y Back from the Dead noise I could imagine someone making. Such a wimpy little ding dong for that.
Yeah, but, yeah, baby. That's all budget will allow.
You're just jealous because you can get a ding ding ding. I did.
Yes, that's true. And by the way, I mean, it did lead to which Don said, mentioned the title, like The Steeple is the sixth number one rock single for you guys, which is crazy. And this is, I think, the fifth record for you guys. So that's pretty wild. Good for you guys on that.
Thanks. Yeah, I know it was a long process, but all that was poured into the making of this album. And we really wanted to challenge ourselves on this record. It was a difficult record to make, even without the COVID. You know.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about, because I do think there's a couple of things on this record. Being a fan for a long time, there's a song, what is it called? I'm looking it up here, Wicked Ways, and it had a double bass, which I think is the only time I've ever heard a double bass on a Hailstorm song. And some of the songs are also definitely more aggressive, less arena rocky, more aggressive-y. Was this intentional, or was it a byproduct of the pandemic? You know what I mean?
I think it was a little bit of all of what you just said. It was, you know, when we got back in the studio, we were so anxious to just get back at it. We were so hungry and like, you know, just a wound spring ready to go. And also Scott just has a great vision of what rock lovers in general are wanting to hear. And I think our MO with every album besides this one was always like, it was very Mutt Lang. It was very much like, leave a lot of space, distance equals depth, like leave space and play everything really simple. And with this album, we started kind of falling into that when we got in the studio. And then Scott and both Scott and Nick Riskulenix, our other producer who tracked my drums and tracked all of the music, and also was a huge part of getting the sound of and the feel of the album. All of them were like, okay, like, I'm bored with this. Like, if you're just going to play, you're playing I Get Off 3.0, you're playing the same, you know, boring drumming. Like, let's bring your double bass pedal. Let's get crazy. And Scott started throwing, he's like, I started writing with Scott for Chemical Fire, and I was writing drum parts for that project, and I sent them to him, and he put them in his Pro Tools, and he was like, and he called me. He was like, RJ, like, this stuff is crazy. Like, you can play all this? I'm like, yeah, that's how I like to play. Every single Hailstorm record, every producer has told me to play less, play less, play less.
Wow, that's weird. That's funny.
And he was like, oh, we got to apply this to the Hailstorm record. So he starts sending me all these curveballs, and I'm like, oh, boy, okay, I got to practice. I better you know, blow the dust off my double bass pedal and jump back into it. And it was a challenge. And that was a really fun challenge as a drummer for me, was because I had been solely a single bass player. I, you know, was raised on John Bonham and Dave Grohl and all these guys. So I was just strictly single bass for years.
Did you feel restricted? Did you feel restricted? Like, did you feel that, oh, why can't they let me expand more? Like, if the last four albums, I've been wanting to do all this shit.
No, I was very much on board with, like, that was kind of the sound that we were going for. We were trying to make arena rock at the time, you know, and we were trying to make a sound that would make sense if you played it in an arena, which I'm sure all of us have been to many shows in arenas. The sound is awful. They're not built for sound. There's arenas in Europe and in the UK that are actually have sound baffles, and they're built for, like, sounding really nice. In the US, like, everything is all just hockey games.
Although I'd be telling you, I was amazed. I went to MSG right before the pandemic and was amazed. They redid the sound at MSG. I couldn't believe how good it sounded. It was always one of the worst places to see a band live. Other than the coolness of, oh shit, I'm in Madison Square Garden, the sound was always terrible, but now it's pretty fucking great. But that
they've redone the sound there.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Wild. Yeah. But that's interesting. Does that excite you now to play double bass live? Have you done it yet?
Yeah, because I started thinking, like, well, if the only way that a band can play and sound good in an arena is to play really dumb and simple, then why are bands like Avenged Sevenfold and Slipknot playing arenas? Because they're going crazy, and, like, all their music has all this angst and excitement and passion in their stuff. I would love for me personally just to be able to play a style of drumming that gets me excited, because I know if I'm excited up there, the crowd's going to get excited. They're going to feel that energy, and that's what we've all been about. So I think that for the sake of us not just regurgitating the same stuff and wanting to give our audience something brand new and exciting, we knew that we had to make music that excited us first and foremost, because otherwise our audience, our listeners, are not going to feel it.
Right. Well, okay, Don, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, if you listen to you know, their biggest hits, including, you know, the ones off the new album, the title track and the Steeple, they're all heavy. You don't have any ballads that are number one. Like, all your number one songs are all heavy. And I love that about it, that this young band could come in when everyone's saying rock is dead and write super heavy songs that still strike a chord with the majority of the audience. So you go on Apple Music, you listen to Hailstorm Essentials, heavy, 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 but still, again, accessible, which I love.
Well, it just takes 20 years to have an overnight success. That's all.
Yeah, everybody. You said, you know, for years you're doing dumb and simple. Don and I both have built our entire careers on dumb and simple.
Hey, I can relate to that. You know?
All right, before we go any further, are you over the age of 21?
Yes.
Are you living in the states where Delta 8 is legal?
Why wouldn't I?
Oh, look who's here.
Yes.
Is this the Delta 8 Empire?
I've been here the whole time, dude.
Oh, man, you were so quiet.
No, I've been kicking in the corner watching.
Delta 8's for everybody.
It's for everybody.
Yeah.
The dummies, primarily.
The non-dummies that want to be dummies.
People that aren't dummies, but, you know, they're probably dummies. Yes, on a slow crawl to Dummyville.
Go to yoDelta.com where you can stock up on high-quality lab-tested Delta 8.
Hey, dummies, get some gummies.
Dummies.
Vapes and gummies for you dummies.
Should be their new slogan.
It rhymes for you doofuses. Hey, lazy eye, I'm talking to you. That's right.
Oh, man, that reminds me.
Do you want to be like the Delta 8 vampire?
Let me tell you a true story.
Please, Ralph, Delta 8 kick it, dog. Vampire. I got nothing but time.
Fucking gorgeous girl, right?
Mm-hmm. Always.
Body amazing.
Totes.
Beautiful face.
Booyah.
crazy lazy eye.
Holy shit. No way.
It was wild.
Now she can suck your dick and check for parking at the same time.
It was wild. She came here to get like surgery. They wouldn't do it. It was really weird. Anyway.
She's like, Ralph, I'm blowing you. I can see that you haven't shaved your balls and there's a cockroach on your wall.
If you're over the age of 21.
Yay.
Living in a majority of the states where this
children
is
of the night. Listen to me.
You dummies with gummies.
Dummies with gummies and vapes.
Just go to YoDelta.com. Use the promo code GAS. Get 25% off. Pff,
Jewish all day long on this show. Huh?
High five it, Jews.
You can't keep the Jew off of this show.
They don't even want it, but they're going to get it because they're 25%.
Happy Sukkot. I love Sukkot because it protects me from the sun. And I can bite Jewish people while they eat.
What is it called again? The house?
Sukkot.
No, the house has a name.
A sukkah.
A sukkah. Jesus, you're better at Judaism than me.
Oh, you did not know the Delta vampire converted for a girl back in 86? Oh, her name was Samantha, and she had heavy hangers for a thin girl. Jew boobs, I called them.
Go to YoDelta.com, promo code GAS. Let's get back into it.
Jew boobs all day long.
Jew boobs.
Jew boobs.
Jew boobs.
Yes, I like to believe people are saying it with me. Let's get back into it.
And speaking about now, I didn't see any of the actual set, but did you actually do a set of stand-up comedy in Ireland?
That's what I wanted to ask him about.
Yeah, let's get into this. Let's get into it.
Well, you know, I'm sure, I have much respect for stand-up comedians that can actually do it, like Don, and I have much of for everyone that actually gets up and does stand-up. Do you also do stand-up?
I do not. Or? No, I've been.
Okay,
you know, it's funny.
That was good.
My other co-host, Big J, right before the pandemic, before the world shut down, had challenged me to write a 10-minute set, and the deal was I could not work it out on stage at all. I just had to go open for him cold on a weekend. I was like, I'm fine with it. I know I'm going to bomb, but I'll do it. And I started writing. I had maybe one or two good jokes that I liked, and then the world shut down. So if I ever going to do it, it might be in another year or two, because it's still, we're not really fully
luckily
open.
For the world.
Luckily for the world. But it was only going to be one weekend, Don. It was going to be like three or four shows. It was going to be horrible, but I was ready to do it.
So it was like an open mic night?
Yeah.
One upside of COVID. What did you say, RJ?
What was like an open mic night kind of deal? Or
no, I couldn't. No, he was going to. Jay, headlines. Like, it's gonna
oh,
be
he was going to bring you up.
Oh, I was going to be a headlining opening for him at like a 500-person room.
Wow. Oh, that's a start. Starting with the heavyweights. No, yeah. I did an open mic night in Nashville one time, and everybody loved it. Everybody was laughing. My bandmates took video. They sent it to our manager. And I'll tell you that on that UK tour, it was not my idea. I was kind of forced into it by management, because like our manager, just every time I saw him, he was like, dude, I saw your stand up comedy. It's so stupid. You just get up and you tell dad jokes and you do your own rim shot. So like, what a great idea. And I was like, yeah, it was just for fun, whatever. He's like, you have to do that on the next Hailstorm tour. I'm like, I don't think comedy and rock shows really mix, you know, but it's like, oh, fuck it, I'll try it. So I did it. I did a very exclusive stand-up show in Dublin, and it was amazing. Like, everybody absolutely loved it. But then the next couple times I did it, like, it just wasn't fitting in the set. Like, it didn't really make sense, because it was a Evening With tour. So it was like, you know, an acoustic opening set with like piano and like, you know, an acoustic guitar and stuff like that. And then they're like, well, why don't we throw RJ up in the middle and have him do like 5 minutes of comedy? Like, okay. And I did it. And it was great in Dublin. But then at the other shows, it just wasn't like working with the flow of the set. So so we were just like, okay, like, let's pull the plug on that. But I think if I were in that environment where people showed up and wanted to hear comedy, then I would totally do it again.
So did you write your jokes, or were they jokes that you lifted? They were all original RJ material?
I started just kind of like writing just stupid, dumb dad jokes and a couple of them I took from like tradition. I took like traditional old like open source dad jokes and tried to twist them a little bit and kind of make them into like the theme of like a touring musician or something like that. But it was just for fun. But
I like the idea of you doing your own rim shots. That's fucking funny. Yeah.
You know, me and Florentine performed down in Nashville a couple months ago.
Oh, nice.
Lizzie and Joe came to the show, And we hung out afterwards, talking, catching up after a couple of years. Not one mention of RJ doing stand-up on that last tour. Then when I read it, I go, I can't believe her or Joe did not mention this to me, because you know I go out and open for bands, so I love combining those two things together. And I thought it was so cool when I saw that you did that, man, especially overseas, where we speak the same language, but there's way different nuances.
It was the accents, like the accent barrier, I think, lot of, because the idea is like, rattle off jokes really rapid fire, really fast, do the rim shots. By the time you're on joke 9, they're just getting joke 1. And in the US and in certain parts of the UK, it worked fine. But like where the accents were really thick, that's where like I think there was kind of an accent barrier. But they were still on board. They were like, hell yeah, like this is great. You know, they had a great time.
Do you have a desire to do more of it, like an actual setting of going to do stand up?
Well, I've just had so much respect for stand-up comedy as an art form. I'm a lover of all forms of art, you know? And comedy is such an incredible art form that blows my mind. Like, I really want to see that George Carlin documentary, because mm-hmm. Carlin was, like, one of my absolute favorites growing up. I loved Dave Attell, Robin Williams, and those guys.
Well, you say Dave Attell like he's dead. You said, I love Dave Attell. He's still around.
I know he's still around, but like I haven't heard anything. He has one album.
Now he's out
he
with
came Bert out with Shanks with the Memories. Yeah. It was hilarious.
Big J is out with him right now with Bert Kreischer. They're doing a tour together. Yeah.
You know, I have so much respect for Dave Attell too, because he never sold out. He was like, I'm a club comic. I'm always going to be a club comic. And he did that Bump and Mike's thing on Netflix. It was hilarious.
You should see Insomniac. If you never saw Insomniac, that was one of his best shows ever. And he walked from it because they wouldn't let him do it the way he wanted to do it once it started to get popular.
Yeah, I got respect for him, man. He's
Don, I'm imagining you're friends with Attell, right, Don? I'm sure you are, right?
Oh, yeah. I've known Attell a long time, and I agree with RJ. I mean, besides the fact that he's brilliant and just almost anything he says is funny, yeah, he's just always just been Dave, man. He's like the Motorhead of comedians. I'm not changing for anything. Either love me or you don't, so...
That's great.
That's such a great analogy.
Yeah, he really is. I mean, I think that Big J is very similar to him in that he is unwilling to do anything if he feels that it just doesn't feel right to him. Where most comics would be like, how much are you paying me? All right, fine. Fuck it. I'll do it. Where Attell walked away from that many times. And Jay is saying the same thing as that. But anyway, you talked about Scott Stevens, who is, said from the XCs, and he wrote with a Hailstorm, but he's also a writer.
For the Devils.
Say it again.
And a great defenseman for the New Jersey Devils.
You're talking to a guy that knows nothing about sports. But so now you have a new band with also, and it could have been called like Dueling Drummers, because it's the drummer of Lit, who's been on the show also with Diamante last year.
Oh, nice.
And it's called Chemical Fire, spelled very oddly. But can you talk about the nexus of this and what the plan is with it? Because obviously, as you've said several times, Hailstorm is a fucking machine that's constantly out on the road. So even if it takes off huge, I know it just came out, how are you going to put the two together, especially with your ever-increasing stand-up career?
Oh, God. No, I don't think that's happening. Like I said, I got respect for stand-up comedians so much that I don't think I will be doing it professionally. But if like a Danny Wimmer Festival has a comedy tent, I'll get up and tell some dad jokes. I don't care. But so the genesis of that project was basically because of the lockdown, there was nothing else we could do but write. So I was writing with everybody. I was writing with Scott Stevens, Blair Daly, Zach Malloy, and Taylor Carroll, who is an incredible, brilliant producer and songwriter, and also plays drums in Lit. And I think we met when he was with Pillar on our first album cycle, and we've kind of always stayed in touch. And then during the lockdown, we were like, why don't we just write some songs together for fun and see what happens? And we developed a really great creative rapport together. Like we were like, man, like we're writing some of the best stuff we've ever written. Like, let's start a band. Like, cool, you know? And then all of a sudden, reality started kicking back in, and I'm just like, oh, man, like, this is a lot of work maintaining two bands. But I figured if Corey Taylor could do it with Slipknot and Stone Sour, then I think I can too, you know?
And he said, let's use a name that nobody can find. Let's call it Chemical Fire, but spell it really strangely.
Yeah, right.
And is there an album coming out? What's the plan with it?
We're still writing, but we wanted to launch the socials so we could start building up a social media following. So when we go to shop for record deals and or for publishing deals, the first thing they're going to ask is like, how many followers you got? You know, because that's the world we live in now, is the social media world. But we're fine with it. We love creating social media content. It's actually really fun. I know, like, it's kind of a weird world we live in with TikTok and Instagram and all that. But I was really into Vine when that came out, and I was starting to make silly, hilarious, like, cut videos. And TikTok kind of reminds me of that. So I feel right at home, like, making silly content. It's like, if I don't have a stand-up career, at least I can make, like, comedic content. And also during the lockdown, I was hired to write and co-host a podcast called Stop, Drop, and Talk.
That was going to be my next question. I don't think you're doing that anymore, right?
Oh, no, it's still going. It's just, again, like, you know, Hailstorm, Chemical Fire, and Dan Cattullo, who you also know through Shiprocked, incredible multi-Emmy award-winning producer and great friend of mine. He's also just got his hands full. So it's more like a thing that we just do every once in a while as of now. But, I mean, we definitely have some plans for the future. But right now it's just super chaotic. But luckily I was able to apply the tools that I learned from social media, from comedy writing, from co-hosting and video editing, and started applying them to another one of my great passions, and that's fragrance. The art of perfumery.
Really? How did I miss that part? Did you really?
So I have a YouTube channel called Dr. Magnificent, and S-C-E-N-T. Oh, no. And that was like a really fun way for me to be able to stay busy on tour by doing editing. I love editing. I love working. As a songwriter, I work with Pro Tools. I work on a laptop. But a way to get away from that is sometimes to work on video content. And I actually, in honor of your show of Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll, I actually have 10 fragrances for your audience that I selected today. Would you like to hear them?
Well, actually, yes, because I'll tell you why. I'm very interested in this, and I'll tell you why. These are these fragrances that you curate? Not fragrances that you create, fragrances that you're a fan of. Is that what you're saying?
There are fragrances I'm a fan of because I'm a fan of music. I'm a fan of comedy. I'm a fan of all forms of art. And I'm also a fan of a lot of really prominent perfumers out there. So I started getting into fragrance because, like, during meet and greets, I always want to, like, make sure I look good, make sure I smell nice. And because, you know, when you're on the road, it's hard to find a shower. So I've been, you know, and fragrance should not be a replacement for a shower, but, like, that was kind of the beginning of it. It's like, I better bring, like, a good plethora of smells with me, because in the early days, touring in an RV and playing little rinky-dink clubs, like, you don't want to smell bad. Like, we've toured with enough bands where, like, they walk in, you're like, oh, my God. And, like, I don't want to be like that. So
I don't think you realize, by the way, you touched on a very big topic for me, and I didn't even know this, because I wore a fragrance for fucking years, and it's I never would have thought this would be coming up on the show.
What was it?
So it's weird. It was a knockoff of a very expensive thing called the Angel by Theory something. It's a very famous guy, right? They're a big one. But I actually liked the knockoff, the way it smelled, better than the really expensive one. The knockoff was $50. The expensive one was like $300. And I stuck with the knockoff. Then it disappeared about 3 years ago. And for the last 3 years, I have joined these dumb websites where they send you samples of different scents to try and find one that I truly embrace and like.
Really?
And I have not found one. I finally found something I kind of liked. And I'm like, oh, let me look into this. And it was a fucking $1,000 fragrance. So I'm not going to buy that. It's too much. So you are speaking my language and you didn't even realize it. How about that?
Wow. I think I know what you're talking about. I think it's Terry Mugler.
That guy. Mugler. Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, that guy.
Angel. Is it Angel or? Oh, it was Angel Man. I actually have that one.
Yeah, that's so funny. Don, I bet you never thought this was going to happen.
No, it would just made me think, because we were talking about David Tell. David Tell always had that one joke. He goes, I'm trying a new cologne now. It's called Free Sample.
And also, by the way, I would say 20 years ago, maybe more, I was hanging out with David Coverdale, name drop, backstage, and I remember thinking, holy shit, this guy smells so good, that I emailed his wife to ask him, what the fuck was he wearing? And it was like a private blend that he didn't even want to share with me. I'm like, all right, fine, good for you. I'm not going to ask, but that's crazy. And it stuck with me for 20 years. So
Wow.
That, you just is held up the bottle. That is the one.
Amen by, yeah. by Mugler.
So funny.
This one is still available. It's still out there.
I always liked the knockoff better, so I never bought that one. The knockoff doesn't exist anymore. It was called Blue Sugar, and it doesn't exist anymore, but I liked it better. They don't make it anymore. Anyway.
Blue Sugar is my favorite stripper.
Your favorite stripper?
Yeah.
So well, that was Booger Sugar. Sorry.
Yeah. I've been looking for a new fucking fragrance, so maybe one of the ones you're going to tell us about.
Well, you could also try Mugler's Alien Man, which is really fresh, really bright. But this one is just a mishmash of notes. It's got like coffee and everything. But it's a really good one. Yes, yes, I highly recommend that. But it's really hard to find this line. There's like Pure Havan. There's
so many. Malt. He makes so, and they all look exactly alike bottles. It's fucking confusing.
But they're all discontinued, which is just a shame. But this one is still available, and I do like this one. It there's a lot going on, but I find that's a really great like professional scent.
I'm a very professional person, RJ. I don't know.
This is like one of those wine guys. You know,
exactly, like all the notes and stuff. Yeah, but I think we may be able to find a really good one for you and for your audience because this is the sex, drugs, and rock and roll show, right?
Right.
So
his audience needs cologne.
What's that?
His audience needs cologne. Trust me.
Yes. His audience needs to smell nice. So when I think of sex, drugs, and rock, I think of like really sexy and sensual and really just like
You've obviously seen me on video before. You're describing me perfectly.
Yes, sexy, sensual. I mean, just like look at these mugs, and you get the pleasure of watching every week, every couple days. But there's one called Psychedelic Love by Initio, and one of the main ingredients. This is an ingredient called hedione, and it's supposed to unlock the pleasure centers of the brain. So this is basically an aphrodisiac scent.
Oh,
really
hello.
Good.
I need all the help I can get. I'll take a look at that one.
Oh, does it have Luffy in it?
It's really good. So. Maybe. It is called Psychedelic Love. So, and of course, we're also into narcotics because of the sex and the drugs. So that's a good fit. But of course, if you want something that's really just solely based on the drugs part, you could always try Intoxicated by Killian, which is a pretty fitting name. It's a cardamom scent, but it's really fantastic. Very, very intoxicating. So there you go. And of course, alcohol is a really good a good drug, so you could try Baranda by Nasamato by Alessandro Gutierrez, and this is a whiskey. This is a whiskey fragrance, and
do you
very
fear
boozy.
That people might think that you're drunk when you're not? Is that a problem?
If you wanna splash this on and get pulled over by a cop, then
that
you know
be a problem.
Wear at your own risk. But
Don, do you have a fragrance that you like, or you don't wear one?
Well, no, I like that whiskey. Well, I just stay drunk all the time. That way it always smells. I go, no, that's the cologne. Don't worry about it.
Well, then you'll love this one even more. This is the Dawn by Zerjoff. And there's only four notes in this fragrance. It's whiskey, gunpowder, spun sugar, and tobacco. So it's like a cigar, a highball, or an old-fashioned... And you can shoot up some guys. So yeah.
It sounds like you're in Don's house right now. Yeah.
This one is very aggressive, but it's like super, super bad. Like if you want to look like a badass. Now, let's go back to the sex part, because there is a brand of perfumery, a niche brand called Orto Parisi. Same owner as Nasamato, and he has a plethora of great scents that are all themed after different body parts.
Okay.
And
this one is called the Taint?
This one is called Sturcus, and it's themed after a butthole. So if your audience is into butt stuff, they'll really like this. Now, it doesn't smell like butt stuff, but when you get a whiff of it, you're like, okay, this sounds like something that may waft in my olfactory direction while you're doing the nasty. So
how
you might
is that
like
a selling
Sturcus.
Point? I don't know how that would be a selling point. I want to smell like anal sex.
Well, if that's not a selling point for you, then you're going to love this next one by Orto Parisi, and it's just called Seminalis.
For semen?
Need I say more? Yes.
Let me ask you a question. Mm. How much is a bottle of butthole or semen perfume?
Creamy delicious.
Now, how much are they?
These probably run for like around 100, 120, wow. maybe the 100 to 150, but it's like really indie niche, very, very experimental, very artistic. And of course,
so is anal sex, very experimental and artistic.
Very, yes. Exactly. That's why if you're into experimenting, you'll love Ordo Parisi. I've been championing that house forever. Alessandro Gutierrez is one of my favorite perfumers, but let's not forget the leather daddies out there and the leather mommies. So I know that there's those that love to experiment with leather whips and things like that, and you know, and bondage and stuff like that. And that's where you need Dark Lord by Killian, because this is one of the it's one of the most insane leather fragrances I've ever had. It's very dark, very deep, very medicinal, and almost kind of unpleasant if you're not in the right mood for it. So when you're putting on the leather and you're getting the whips out of the pantry, then splash on some Dark Lord.
People, by the way, RJ, people say that about our show. It's unpleasant if you're not in the mood for it. So that's kind of
exactly
cool.
That's why it was so fitting for this show, you know. But if you want to go a little easier, if you don't want to get that intense, if you want to kind of like get out of the dungeon and maybe move more into tying up your partner on the couch on the nice linens or something like that, then you should try a similar one. It's Gucci Guilty Pour Homme. And I don't know if this one's still available. This is also a fantastic, fantastic leather scent. But of course, the sexiest fragrance of all time, in my opinion, is Tom Ford's Tobacco Oud. This one is funny, just, I splashed it on one time and I smelled it and I was like, this kind of smells like a sweaty, naked person.
Wow. I bet that's one that sounds right to me. It's funny that you really are speaking my language. I am currently in the process of trying to find something that I like. Don, are you single, Don? You're not single, right?
Yeah, I am.
You are. I like the feeling when a girl says to me, oh, my God, you smell great. Like, that's, you want that reaction from a girl. As a single man, you need that help. I need every little thing that's going to push me over the edge at my age. I need every little help I can get. So I think I'm going to reach out to you after this through Instagram and get some other recommendations, because I could definitely use it.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
You mentioned at the top of this about musicians and stuff like that with your sense, but one thing that I was really happy to see with you guys, to switch gears for a second, when COVID hit, you guys helped launch Rhodey Strong, because I was like, those are the people getting the most fucked on this, because there is no merch sales for the guys that are building the stage. There is no fucking anything. So I was really glad to see you guys embrace it. And a lot of other bands jumped on board as well. And it was hashtag Rhodey Strong. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Okay. Well,
really nice while you're doing it, please.
Oh my God. I take my bottles on the road with me, and like, I've been having so much fun with my crew, with the crews of other bands and the other bands and even the local crews. I have like this giant rifle case that I keep all my bottles in. I'll roll into the venue with it. I'll open it up. I'll just be like, all right, who wants to smell good? Like, take your pick.
I mean,
it's
great. People don't realize how the olfactory scent is the most important of your senses in terms of connection with someone. And what we think is, oh, I like the way they looked, or I like their personality. 70% of it, something ridiculous like that, is actually smell, which is why.
Yes. Yes. And I'm going to find both of your perfect ideal signature scents when I see you. Oh, I'm bringing my case with me.
Yeah, we got to figure that out.
I just saw, I had an idea because I just saw Sammy Hagar in the Circle. And during the show, Sammy's handing out cans of his Beach Bar rum and like going and pouring, you know, pouring the Beach Bar rum in people's mouths. I picture this. RJ comes out from behind the drum set with different scents, and you spray each person with a particular scent.
Right. I like it. And also keep
try to guess what their ideal scent would be, what they would really like.
Because your body chemistry has a lot to do with it also. The way you smell naturally will change. Like, it may smell great on one person and smell like shit on you, which is why.
That's why you always have to try certain, because you're right. Like you mentioned, David Coverdale, right, was the one that you got the idea for Angel Man. It On him, this one probably smelled really good, but when you tried the blue sugar, you're like, no, that works much better with my skin.
Right, so, exactly. Right. It's wild.
That's why I've always advocated for sampling and trying things, but I think the main reason that I've been wanting to get into creating fragrance content, and not only just to entertain the fans and all that, but also give them another form of self-love, another form of something that can kind of, you can kind of escape from reality for a little bit. Because you're right, the olfactory sense is so powerful. When I smell certain fragrances, I'm like, it puts me in a whole new mood. And if I splash on something and I leave the house, I just have a little extra layer of confidence. And I think that really helps people in life and helps them get ahead in life. So
I thought you were going to say, by the way, you started it all. It was a long play to finally tell your sister, for God's sake, shower, Lizzie, you stink.
Yeah, for hell.
Watch my channel, Lizzie, please.
I guessed her signature scent, and I think it may be this. It's called 100 Silent Ways by Nishane. I think that's the one that I picked out.
I'm definitely going to talk to you about it, dude, afterwards, because it's crazy that this is exactly that. I don't know the name of the website off the top of my head, but they send you five little samples. You pay a monthly fee, and they send you five samples every month, and then you pick the one you like and you buy it.
Yeah.
I haven't found anything I like yet. Anyway, so how did Rhodey Strong come about, you were saying?
Oh, yeah. So anyway, Rhodey Strong. Yeah. So we're the kind of band, obviously, like, you know, my sister and I, we've been doing it for forever. And we're obviously like direct family, but that whole family kind of thing. I mean, our parents used to, I mean, you remember Don, and I mean, like, you remember back in the day, Mama and Papa Hale hanging out, you know, our two, like, number one and number two fans right there, you know.
And your dad was a bass player, right?
What's that?
And your dad was your bass player for a while.
In the beginning, our dad was our very first third member of Hailstorm. Yeah.
That's
until
wild.
It got to the age that it wasn't cool to have dad in the band anymore. And we had to find people our age. But as bands evolve, so that mentality has never left us. And it's been the same way with our crew as well. Like, we feel so close to our crew, and we feel like family with them. We've had some of our crew has been with us for, you know, over a decade now. So, there's such a huge part of our world that we often forget that, like, the followers and the fans of Hailstorm don't really think about that. So, and they're kind of these invisible figures.
Right.
Nobody really thinks about them. So that's why during the whole pandemic, we really wanted to promote the fact that, like, hey, when you come to a Hailstorm show, all that gear that we're playing, that PA, that light show, everything that you love, that the whole experience that you get, that's all because of the crew. We couldn't do it without them.
Yeah.
So, and a lot of them caught on. So we were doing these t-shirts, and it basically describes their life. Load in, what is it? Load in, load out, drink, repeat, basically, or something like that. I think that's what it said. And I've seen a lot of them at the show. So, but you're right. Like, as artists, like, we still are able to get publishing. We're still able to do songwriting. We're still able to
sell shirts
things.
And other things. Yeah, it's wild. I would say,
you know, real estate.
My standard stage shtick when I get on stage is first in, last out. That's your fucking roadies. You know, they're the guys that are there before everyone and stay after everyone leaves to make sure you enjoy the show. It's wild.
I mean, granted, there's always OnlyFans, and, you know, a lot of them have really nice feet, so I'm sure that there's a future for them there, but they don't want to do that. They want to be on the road. They want to be working, and like, for us, when we take time off to make an album or to write or whatever, they're hopping on another tour to pay their bills. So the crew members and like, and not even just the touring crew, but, like, the local crew and venue, and even venue owners, like independent venue owners, we've been trying to, like, really just try to talk about the importance of keeping them alive, because otherwise, you know, this thing that we love so much is going to die, you know?
Right, 100%.
And we don't want to lose our favorite venues that we go to see bands at, and, you know, so, it's so important to us that they are okay. You know,
right. So, and hopefully now that the world is reopening, they can start, you know, actually generating income again. Because what a fucking crazy time. The last thing I'm going to ask you before we go to the first, I am a big fan of a band that I heard you mention a few times, and I guess they were from where you guys came from. You were very into Silvertide, and you love Nick Perry.
Right?
I fucking love those guys so much, and I've been a fan of theirs since forever. And Nick's new band is great, but man, that first record of the two of them together, they were like the modern day fucking songwriting duo from the gods. I wish that never disbanded, but boy, do I love Silvertide.
Yeah, they were like the local heroes growing up in Pennsylvania. They were from Philly, so we became really tight with them, and we were doing local shows. And then one of our very first tours ever as a band was with them in Shinedown, like 2005. It was a long time ago, and we were just newbies. Like, we had no idea what we were doing. But yeah, like, it was what a great first tour to have with like your hometown buddies. And they were totally hometown heroes. Like, they were the kind of band that bands like us looked up to. We were like, I hope that someday we get to get signed and we get to like get a record deal. And you know,
they were so good. They recorded a second album that never came out. I wish it would just be released at this point.
I know, annoying.
Just fucking put it out. From what
I heard, that second album was like really different from their first, out, like sound wise. But I hadn't heard any of it. I heard that somebody was telling me, and I don't know if this is true. This could be totally wrong, but they were kind of going in a different direction, like kind of more like trying to do something a little bit more modern sounding, not necessarily like that kind of like old school classic rock sound.
Well, I can tell you, D. Snyder told me once that like he had come on my show his years ago, and he said he just left the studio to record a track for their second record. So he was a backup vocalist, or did like a dual vocal thing with Wally, I think is the name of the singer. I mean, at least if they're putting D. Snyder on, I can't imagine it was too modern, but who the fuck knows?
I guess, you know? Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I guess we'll never know. I guess you're more friendly.
He never does anything in the background.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe
force Nick to get that fucking album out. Just like I've been trying to get damn Yankees to release their third record for years. They won't do it. All right, so now we got to do the first, because we got to wrap up with you.
The first time ever I saw concert Detroit.
We're going to start the first right now. The name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We ask every guest this since the dawn of the show, fucking 7 years ago at this point. Your first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll. We meet some band that you went on your own volition, not one your parents drew you to, that you went to see. And hopefully it's a band we know, not some Christian local band we never fucking heard of. But what's that band that sticks out in your mind, RJ?
Oh my God. First band that like I actually went to go see like that without my parents.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Probably a local Pennsylvania band. Probably there is a band called Dead Leaves that we were good friends with. And I think that I took a girl to see them that I was kind of flirting with, and I was kind of trying to date. I don't think anything happened though.
Fair enough.
She probably thought I was a nerd, and she was like, "What is this?" You know. But they were a kick-ass local Pennsylvania band. I think they're still going too. Which
we're on Shiprock once. I think I feel like I know that name. I think they might have
Dead Leaves.
I think did they spell leaves weird?
No, it was just Dead Leaves.
Oh, then I'm thinking of somebody else. Okay,
maybe it was a different band. I don't know. They're a local band from Pottsville, Pennsylvania. I think kind of a mountain town in Pennsylvania.
And the first big band you saw, is there one that sticks out? Or you've been in music for so long.
Maybe it might have been Rush. Right. I think I saw Rush when I was like 10 or something. I don't know who I went with. I forget. I think my dad might have taken me there. Right.
That's cool.
But I guess
that's not work. A date band.
I'm trying to think of like a band that I actually went out to see like without it. Oh gosh, I don't know. I mean, like it's been.
You've been in the industry
since I was like
for
16,
so long.
17.
Yeah, it is kind of weird.
It's hard to like see a band that you don't like actually. You're not actually playing a show with. It might have been. It might have been something, honestly, it might have been like way, way later when I was in my 20s, like out in LA. It might have been like Bruno Mars or something like that, like a show that that I hit up my booking agent. And I was like, hey, can I get some tickets to this? Like,
that's cool.
Something like that.
And what about the first drug you did after weed, unless weed was the hardest drug or not the first drug?
I really loved Molly, I'll be honest. I had a huge Halloween party at my house in LA years ago. And it was one of those parties where like I spent money on props. Like I got like all these haunted house props that like jumped at it. And I invited like a bunch of people over and a bunch of friends of friends, people I didn't even know. It was scary because, like, I thought, like, I don't know these people. Are they going to steal something? Or are they going to burn my house down? But it was, like, one of those, like, parties where, like, everybody was doing drugs. And I think my drug of choice was Molly, and I think a lot of other people were doing the same thing. So we were all kind of on the same page. Luckily, nobody broke anything. My house didn't get burned down, but I did put a tarp down on my hardwood floor, luckily, because the house was completely trashed the next day. But, you know, that was like one of those YOLO moments. Like, I'm glad I could say I did it. I don't know if I'll do it again, but I'm glad.
I hope that your prop budget exceeded your current bell budget for this one, because that little ding thing was ridiculous. Hopefully you had nicer props this time.
Spent all my money on perfume. That's the problem.
And now the first time you had sex.
First time I had sex was actually a very awkward. We were both drunk. Luckily, I wasn't so drunk that I didn't forget to wear protection. Wrap it, don't be a fool, wrap your tool, kids. But it was New Year's. You wanted my, like, lose my virginity story?
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. It was, I don't think we ever talked about this.
How old were you, by the way?
I was,
nine.
I think I was 15. 15, all right, 16,
that's younger than usual, like, but okay, that's cool.
And we were doing a show. It was a New Year's show, and I think it was, like, in Delaware. It was, like, right on the beach, and we had this huge – it was in a hotel, and they gave us this huge, like, super suite for us to, like, party in, and all of us were partying, and we were drinking, and we were just going crazy, and there was just this one girl that I was kind of, like, you know, talking to the whole night, and she was really cool, and she was like, I got a room over here. You want to go over there? I was like, okay. And we went over there, and that's where the magic happened. I think I probably lasted about 20 seconds, and right. And I was like, how was it for you? I don't know, I'm drunk. Okay, fuck it. And it was like, okay, well, there we go. There, so long, virginity. Thanks.
And you never, you know? Did you ever see her again? You never saw her again?
I talked to her a little bit afterwards, but then I don't think anything really happened from it. No, like, you know.
I like that you were at least smart enough to put a condom on.
She just wanted one thing that night, so I was like, okay, I'll give it to you.
All right, so we'll say that the new album is out now, Back from the Dead. As we said, it doesn't need too much help from us, already spawning number one singles. His other band, Chemical Fire, is out. Well, at least somewhat social media-wise, they're out. You could follow him at RJ Hale on Instagram or Hailstorm Rocks. They're currently on tour with Pretty Reckless and Lilith Czar. They'll be the PNC July 28th, and then a fall tour with The Warning and New Year's Day. The thing that I don't like, and that's funny, so there's a band that I'm sure you all know, Living Color, right? And years ago, I've been friends with Corey for a long time. And there was a time where they asked me to potentially manage them. We're going back a long time, right? And I said, I'll tell you something, Corey, if I become your manager, first thing that happens is we stop doing Black people rock band tours, because it's hacky. They always would put them out with King's X and Bad Brains and Seven Dust. Oh, there's a Black guy in the band. Let's put him on with Living Color. And in the same respect, it bothers me that it's always, oh, if it's going to be Hailstorm, let's get the Pretty Reckless. Let's get fucking New Year's Day. Other bands with chicks in it, as opposed to just putting out rock tours. Does that bother you at all, or it doesn't bother you?
Oh, perfect. To be perfectly honest, it doesn't at all. Well, okay. So first of all, talking about Living Color situation, I can agree with you that rock music needs more diversity. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to see a much broader plethora of the representation of what the human race really is, because mm-hmm. I think that rock music and rock fans are just as open and as accepting and should be. If they aren't, then they should be. But I love seeing that there is, I'm seeing more of that as time goes on. I think that for, like, you know, the since the dawn of time, rock fans have been like white dudes, you know?
Right. I just don't want it to be a novelty anymore that it's a chick group or whatever.
I mean, obviously it's not my place to say because I'm a white dude, but I personally would love to see more diversity. There's a band called Fire from the Gods that are amazing, and they actually talk about what it's like to be marginalized in the U.S. for you know, who he is, for what he is. And I love the idea that that message is starting to seep into rock fans, because I think that we need more perspective of what other people go through. I mean, even just starting in this country. And I think that's really an important message. And I encourage more of that in the rock world. I think that we need to be exposed to that type of messaging, and so us, so we're more aware mm-hmm. of, so we can learn. And as far as our situation goes, I'm just so happy as a proud ally of LGBTQ community, of people of color, of women, and everything. Like, I'm just happy to be a part of some sort of change, and glad to do my part and just be there and see it happen, because I'm seeing more and more women that want to come to rock shows. You know, it was always like 80-20 dudes. Now it's like,
well, I would disagree. Right, in the 80s, when it was hot guys that were fronting bands, you know, you went to a Bon Jovi show, you knew there'd be a ton of hot chicks there. That just was part of what that was. That was part of that MO. I think in the 90s, it pivoted to being almost all white dudes going to shows. But I'm just saying, it feels so forced when it, every time I see Living Color on tour, you know, there's going to be another black band on the bill. And in the same respect, when I see a female fronted band on tour, 9 times out of 10, the other bands on that bill are also either fronted by or all women. And I just feel it feels forced, as opposed to a genuine, like, hey, they're just a good fucking rock band. That's all that matters.
Well, that's
how I see it. That's how I see this tour with Hailstorm and Pretty Reckless.
I love Pretty Reckless, by the way. I'm such a fan.
Here's absolutely two of my favorite, newer bands. Yeah,
I love that. I think they're awesome, too. I agree. I just feel that I don't know why. Maybe I'm just overanalyzing the whole thing. I feel that it feels forced, especially when I remember that conversation with me and Corey about, I don't know, 15 years ago.
That's an interesting take on that, because I guess you could say that on a business standpoint, we have a lot of cross-pollination of fans, because if you're into us, chances are you're probably into Pretty Reckless or Evanescence or several other ones that we've toured with. But what I love about seeing a package tour like this is that it's not just the fact that it's just a normal tour. Like, it actually is making a statement. It's actually making
a message. Right, I get that. There's a bigger message there, for sure.
The bigger message is that, like we are bands that are fronted by these badass women that can rock just as hard, if not harder, than most of the dudes out there. Yeah. And I think it's inspiring for young girls to see figures like that and feel inspired. And I feel the same exact way about Seven Dust, Fire from the Gods, in Living Color, King's X. You know, I think we need more representation so young people can feel inspired to want to get into our genre of music. Right. When they see, it's just inevitable. It's just human behavior. When you see someone that reminds you of you,
it makes you identify with it.
Yeah. So,
and I will say this, by the way, RJ, your sister drank me under the table that day many years ago. I remember that. Much more badass than I am.
I will end with this, though. I do agree with you that I would love for us to eventually get to a place where it doesn't really, it's not even.
It doesn't matter. It's all part of everything. It's just rock music.
Yeah. I think it's important to, because there is not as much representation in those other areas, I think it's important for us to still have these type of tours with this type of really positive message for change. But eventually, yeah, it'd be great to get to the point where it's just like, that's just the norm.
Right.
Where
it's like, that's what I mean. That's all I mean. That's what I'm saying.
And you know what else I love is, like, at these Danny Wimmer festivals, not only am I seeing more diversity in the rock world, but I'm seeing more diversity in cross-pollinating genres all around. Like, this one festival, Ice Cube played. And then this other one, Cypress Hill played. And it was like really cool to see. To see that too, I love seeing that. I think that music listeners and music lovers in general have a much broader taste in music because of the way that we consume music nowadays. Right. You're not necessarily going to your corner of the record store. You have every song ever created on your phone, and now you can listen to everything. So I love seeing that there's just more diversity all around.
And I also think music fans, especially rock music fans, are far more accepting than people give them credit for, you know, which is
and
really
comedy. They love comedy too.
Yeah.
Speaking of
comedians, Don, play, do your plugs, please, sir.
Don Jameson, host of That Jameson Show, just hit my 150th episode. Recently had Lizzie Hale on the show, along with lots of other great rock musicians. And, follow me on my socials. Come out and see a show sometime. And definitely come and buy me and Jim Florentine a big cheap beers at the Pretty Red Storm show in New Jersey.
Or bring some perfume. That. Bring some perfume to them. One of the
other. Can I plug my fragrance channel?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's called Dr. Magnificent, spelled S-C-E-N-T. Dr. Magnificent. Follow me there. Become an official nostril. We make all kinds of fun fragrance content because why not?
Why not? Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness that comes out every Monday is called Good Sugar. We're opening our first location in New York City on 3rd and 69th Street. It's going to be opening in, I want to say, August or September. And right now, both of my podcasts are in their top 100 of their respective categories. I'm very happy about it. And also, I will be hosting Stone Temple Pilots, King's X, Adler, and ZO2 July 30th. In Long Island at the Paramount Theater. It's also for a charity. And starting on this entire month, you can win tickets. Just listen to the show live on Wednesday nights, and you can win a pair of tickets to join me and Big J Okerson. And that is everything. We're going to add a song to the playlist. Do you want us to add, you pick a song from Back from the Dead? I was going to add Raise Your Horns because you think it's a metal heavy ballad song and just a really pretty ballad, but maybe... whatever one you have a favorite on the track and a favorite track.
I think that's a good one, but I think what time is it? It's noon. Is it noon your time?
It is noon.
I think people are probably wanting to stay pretty hyped up. It's not quite ballad o'clock, so I'd say we rip off their heads with Wicked Ways.
Let's do Wicked Ways with the double drum bass on there. And thank you so much, everyone. We'll see you next time on the SDR
Thank you so
show.
Much. And congratulations to the success of the podcast. I'm a huge fan and so honored to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
I believe we all play the same. You've been listening to the SDR Show.